Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the General Government and Transportation Committee. It's Tuesday, March the 20th, 2001. At this time, I'd like to announce that if you're here relative to Senate Bill 85, because of technicalities relative to some amendments to the bill, we're going to carry the bill over until next Tuesday. So if you were here for Senate Bill 85, you might want to just go ahead and head on home and enjoy the day. Now, what I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2232A with a possible work session, in fact, almost a certain work session. My understanding, we have one person signed up to talk about the bill. We'll quickly move that bill through, and then we'll get on to the other veterans issue, then hearing finally Senate Bill 697 at the end of this process. So with the tap of the gavel, I'll be opening up a public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2232A.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2232 deletes the requirement for triplicate receipts for certain transfers of funds. It also requires the state treasurer to notify the borrowing departments of the funds, the borrowing department's governing body, the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, and the Legislative Fiscal Office of certain fund transfers. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this measure, and we have Mr. Dallas Wieland signed up to testify.
Dallas, welcome. State your name for the record and then proceed.
I'm Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dallas Wieland with the Legislative Fiscal Office and also staff to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, which caused this bill to be introduced this session. This bill is a result of a review conducted by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee with the Department of Fish and Wildlife at the bequest of the interim SR2 committee, co-chaired by Senator Messerly. We found that the department had transferred through loans monies from dedicated funds, monies from one fund to its operating account for use, and not many people were aware of it. To rectify the situation, we reviewed this with the treasurer and his staff and found a rather archaic statute that required the treasurer to fill out receipts in triplicate when transfers were done and send over a copy to the Department of Administrative Services. This bill would take away the handwritten part, but also require these advances or transfers to be recorded, and they notify the Legislative Fiscal Office, the Department of Administrative Services, and also any oversight board that may be involved to improve legislative oversight. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from the committee?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Patrick, that's the only person signed up?
That's correct.
Is there anyone out there who would like to testify any further testimony on House Bill 2232A before we open a work session? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2232A and open the work session with a tap of the gavel.
Chair, I move House Bill 2232A to the floor with a due pass.
Vice Chair Metzger has moved House Bill 2232A to the floor with a due pass. Is there any further comments? We'll stand by for a second. Wait, Senator Carter, let's look at it.
Oh, yeah.
That's good, Bill. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Carno? Senator Messerly?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Chair George?
Aye. Senate Bill, House Bill 2232A is duly passed and sent to the floor with a due pass recommend. Oops.
I'll carry.
Senator Messerly will carry House Bill 2232A. Okay, what I'm going to do at this point is open up a public hearing on, and what we'll do at this, I believe, we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill. I'm going to get this right. Let's try this one more time.
Okay.
Senate Bill 635 and Senate Bill 636.
Yay!
Thank you, thank you. Patrick, tell us about, let's go ahead and read through both of them.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 635 establishes an Oregon Military Museum at Camp Withicum, changes the name of the existing National Guard Military Museum and Resource Center to the Oregon Military Museum. It directs the Oregon Military Department to establish an official repository in the museum for weapons, documents, and artifacts relating to military history of citizens of Oregon, whether the services of the National Guard or any branch of the United States Armed Forces. It directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to place highway signs for the museum on Interstate 205 and State Highway 212, and directs the Oregon Military Department to study the cost of hiring museum staff and report the findings, their findings to and request funding from the Emergency Board by June 30th, 2002. Senate Bill 636 establishes the Oregon National Guard Military Museum and Resource Center at Camp Withicum and creates a Military Museum Advisory Committee that will advise the Oregon Military Department in matters relating to the museum, including day-to-day operations of the museum, maintenance or preservation of military artifacts, provision of military historical displays, fundraising, advertising, and participation in local parades and historical military events. And we have a number of people signed up to testify. The first one appears to be Bernice Haslund.
Why don't you go ahead and let's call several up at the same time.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We have Francis Snodgrass, and also, this one is very difficult to read, I must say. Is that right? Okay. Last name is Snodgrass. First name? Okay. I apologize. I could not read the writing.
You can either speak to both of the bills or one, opposition or in favor, and I'll let you folks decide who's going to go first and state your name for the record and proceed.
I believe we should call Mr. Caldwell up. My name is Bernice. My name is Bernice Harlan, H-A-R-L-A-N. Many of you are acquainted with the name. My husband was Ron Harlan, who worked so hard for the Oregon Veterans Home and many of our veterans' issues. And on 635, establishing the Oregon Military Museum in Clackamas County, we are working and hoping to get a museum of our own through the Greater Seminary Veterans Organization and ODVA, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And we have over 400 units right now, or 400 items in preparation for this, and hoping to be putting this up in the Capitol building, displaying it in the Capitol building come this summer or another month or so. We are for Senate Bill 636, which establishes Oregon National Guard Military Museum and Resource Center. And I am Secretary to the Greater Seminary Veterans Organization for over 20 years. I belong to many organizations, as you can see, all veterans organizations and several community organizations, well, like NESCA. But I belong to the VFW, Military Order of Purple Heart, and American Legion. Thank you.
I'm Frances Snodgrass, and I belong to VFW 661, and I want to vote for the 635 to keep the Oregon Military Museum in Clackamas County, and I want to vote for the 636.
Well, I'm Sam Snodgrass. The man couldn't pronounce my first name because he couldn't read it.
He's trying to read mine right now.
And I'm with the VFW 661. And these two bills, 635 and 636, I am highly in favor of them, and I would like to see them come to pass.
Okay. Well, you guys are quick.
Good.
Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
I just want to welcome Colonel Caldwell. I didn't see him back there. He's out of uniform. That's why I didn't recognize him. My goodness. Welcome. Great.
Okay. Yes, would you do that? They wanted you to come on up. I think that would be great.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. First, I'd like to applaud the committee for taking this task under hand. It is a very difficult task, as you well know, and it has been a major issue within the military department, and I think within this legislative body for a number of years. the committee's embarking on a very, I guess, ambitious task to try to solve a problem that seems to have not been able to find a decent solution for as many years as I can remember, and at least as many years as I've been in this position. We need a facility that adequately, or at least attempts to honor the contributions of the many selfless veterans and Oregonians who have served both in the active component and all services, as well as the National Guard. And we believe in that. Unfortunately, the Oregon Military Department, we don't think these bills are going to adequately get what I think these folks really want to get done, nor do we want to get done. Let me explain some of this. As you know, we have a museum facility at Camp Withicum. The museum is very inadequate with respect to funding, size, and just about any aspect you can list. But it's been a product of just plain old budget constraints, as near as I mean, that's the best I can put it. The cost has traditionally been very minimal. I mean, the cost has been greater, but the expenditures have been minimal. And most of the artifacts that have been restored have been done on people's out of their own pockets, out of money they've raised, and just plain love for that particular subject matter. And most of the artifacts that are there are very unique, and it's one of the best museums in the country with respect to what artifacts we do have within it. We don't have adequate space to display it, and nor do we have adequate personnel to really properly manage it. We do have, and have had for a number of years, one individual who you can call him whatever you like. We choose to call him, right now we call it an archive, and he's our manager of our archive. He's been called a janitor, he's been called a just about anything you could name with respect to museums. That position was taken out of the budget initially. It was added back in this year by the Ways and Means Committee, and we were directed by the Ways and Means Committee to move general funds from another area of our budget to cover the $150,000 cost for the next 2 years. We were also directed by the Ways and Means Committee that we would seek other methods of funding this particular museum, particularly other funded avenues. And that will include everything from donations and gifts to any other mechanism we can come up with. So we have taken upon the effort to try to determine what is the best way to actually give it a good deal of thought and input and gather input from different organizations in the next 2 years to try to come up with some solution that will help fund this particular museum. The bills before us today, granted, they're an effort, but frankly, I don't think that given the way they're written and the way the current law is written, probably isn't going to change things a whole lot. We'll probably have about the same thing we have today. We have chosen to limit what artifacts and how the breadth of this museum simply because of funding. We have chosen particularly to limit right to military issues that are dealing with Oregon and Oregon only. We've had more than one opportunity to get artifacts from other services, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps. Frankly, we don't have the personnel and or the ability right now, given the limited funding that we have, in order to take all those items in. So we tried to narrow the focus of the museum in the last 6 years and say, just deal with what's relevant to Oregon and Oregon's history related to the National Guard, the militia, or an active duty unit that may have been assigned here somewhere between the time we were made a state and the time of today. And that's been their mission, and that's been their charge. That does limit its scope quite a bit, but we thought that was the only reasonable thing that we could do given the lack of money that we had to operate it. So short of finding some dedicated funds that are always going to be there, like gas taxes for highways, which I know you're familiar with, then I don't see that we can. I don't see where these will change a whole lot. We're kind of shifting the furniture around. We're not really gaining, and the gain is that we need to have a permanent source of funding that will permanently allow this to occur. Now, having said all that, I also will tell you that in our long-range construction plans, we have a new facility planned for Camp Withicum. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you it's probably going to be at least a decade before that it's constructed. But part of that building would be a major headquarters where we would consolidate two headquarters, one in Tigard and one in Lake Oswego, and combine them at Camp Withicum. part of our plan is to have museum display space in that armory or in that headquarters and make it more publicly appealing and also more publicly accessible, because we don't have that currently. I would tell you right now, this room right that we're sitting in is larger than the museum that we have at Camp Withicum by about 20%, I would guess. So that kind of gives you an idea. Now, we have other things we do. We have buildings on the camp that are vacant that we allow the museum and their dedicated volunteers to utilize for storage, repair, refurbishing, et cetera. So it's not just that one little space, but the only display space we have is probably about 20% small in this building. So, yes, we're pleased that the legislature's taking a look at this, but in reality, I think we're going to have to take a harder look at it and probably do some more study on this to find out what is the best avenue to approach on this.
Well, Mike, as you're well aware, a lot of times you'll see bills like this come forward because we're trying to put pressure or set a direction. And you may have even heard me comment in this committee, my concern about, first of all, are we prepared for the 5 million folks that are going to come here relative to Lewis and Clark? What an opportunity with possibly 5 million folks that were going to come here to spend tourism dollars in a time maybe when we may need those dollars, to also have them have those other experiences. And I think you and I have actually talked about the fact of now with that wonderful museum at McMinnville, we have the wonderful museum over Tillamook, folks are interested in this subject. And for us to have a quality museum, and what put this bug in my ear, in my bonnet, would be a trip that we took this last fall to Alaska. And we hit a lot of museums and things like that. We were up there in Anchorage. They have a wonderful facility. And I would say that probably 50% of everything in that museum is relative to their veterans, relative to the history, particularly World War II, and relative to the military. It was really wonderful, but it was a very, very expensive, elaborate presentation. But we also recognize that this could have a very, very beneficial effect, you know, to tourism in the state. Tourism seems to have an interest in having this kind of a, in other words, you can come here with a portfolio of things to do in Oregon, and one of those is to visit the wonderful military museums of Oregon. So help us out. Our thought is kind of what direction would you recommend that we take? Because my desire here is to put that pressure on that we at least head down the road and honestly consider some of these things.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, well, speaking to Lewis and Clark directly, as you know, Camp Rylea sits right in the trail where Lewis and Clark left Camp Clatsop and went to Seaside. We are working with the folks at the Park Service to reestablish that trail. We've also offered a piece of property and with their assistance to replicate Camp Clatsop's actual fort on our property, recognizing the fact that if you have 3 to 5 million people coming in here, they all can't get to Camp Clatsop. So we thought we would try to, you know, build a replicate on the post. Two things could happen. One, they could train the volunteers. Secondly, if people can't get tired of waiting in line, they can come to Camp Riley and see a replicate.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a couple of things mm-hmm. we're doing. We're also doing some things at Camp Riley to bring in some of our World War II buildings that we preserved and actually move them to a different spot, put them up so people can come and see what World War II, our veterans, and what those people saw when they first mobilized for World War II, mm-hmm. and they mobilized at Camp Rylea. Along with that comes the artifacts, which is this museum. Our one person, our one individual who does our oversight of our museum is being mm-hmm. tasked with coming up with that display, putting it there, getting it historically factual, and having it available for tourists to see. With respect to Camp Withicum, we have not worked up any plans for people to come through the door to see what we have there. Doesn't mean we can't, it's just simply we haven't done that yet, recognizing the focus is probably going to be in the Northwest Coast. So that's kind of what we've done up to this point.
Question.
Yes.
Am I allowed to add to mine?
Bernice, I was going to come right back to you. Can Senator Carter ask her question, and we'll come right to you.
Colonel, what do you see the cost of this bill would be? What would be the fiscal impact, as you know it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, presently, as I said, we have a very minimal operation. We have one employee. His salary and benefits for a 2-year period is roughly $80,000, $90,000, and I don't have those numbers in front of me, but it's, you know, it's actually a little more than that for 2 years. It's about $100,000, so you may have them, the committee staff may have that.
Well, I saw an initial budget narrative that was part of the governor's recommended budget, I believe, which has been altered by Ways and Means, and my understanding was here that if they had abolished the military museum and gotten rid of the program technician, then it could generate $148,000 during the
year. And then that includes services and supplies, which is very minimal.
Right.
I'm going to say $30,000 on a 2 year period. So right now we're basically running an operation that is extremely low budget. If you were going to look at what it takes to really operate, and I'm talking off the top of my head, to build the adequate facility so people could come and actually see the artifacts and expand the one we have or build one, you're probably looking at anywhere in the neighborhood of $1 million to $1.5 million. Now, to run that facility, you're going to need more than one person if you had it open more than just a few days a week. And again, that's just a cost of, you know, multiplication of probably at least another employee, which would double that cost to somewhere around $250,000 biannually. So that's just rough. That's just fast, you know, just off the top of my head. If we are ever able to get this facility that I'm talking about, where we can leverage federal funds to build the square footage at a reasonable price instead of adding on to what we have, then I think we got a real opportunity to put adequate space in there for display, and we can probably get by with 1.5 people and run a pretty good show on an annual basis.
Is this in the governor's budget?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, it has been added back in by the Ways and Means Committee, and that budget has passed. So I think you voted on it already, or it's coming up here this week. So it is added back in.
Okay.
Pardon me. I was just suggesting that we move you guys to the $50 million hangar that we have at Portland International Airport.
Well, we could come pretty close to filling that, I think.
Would that be an excellent place, though?
Well, we need a B-25 to kind of add to it, and then we'd be just right.
We'll get you one.
Mr. Chair, are you talking about the aircraft hangars, the Pacific maintenance? That's costing the PERS fund $400,000 a month, or $4.8 million a year.
Take that.
How much? $4.8 million a year. We've just done that budget.
Well, we can get some money for a museum if we can figure out what to do with that. What do we do with it?
I'd say we those aircraft hangars have been empty since they were built almost. The company that they were built for didn't last very long, Pacific Aircraft Maintenance, and the buildings are huge, and they mostly sit there empty. A few leases are made on a part-time basis to people who might want to paint a plane or something. But I'll bet you we could fill those up with a lot of military stuff, and I think we ought to be able to use those rent-free.
It's not as regards to military, but it makes sense to me that something like that would happen.
They have been completely empty for this whole period, other than that small
Other than an occasional lease.
And we're paying $4.8 million a year for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's $50 million investment.
That's pretty smart.
But there is some, yes, I just, what Representative Metzger, just asked, there was some testimony in committee that the land that those hangars sit on is owned by the Port of Portland, mm-hmm. who has forgiven millions of dollars in lease money so that the PERS fund could continue to make the payments on the bond. But the Port of Portland would like to extend another runway, so it may be, in fact, that those buildings will actually be torn down, because my first thought was if the National Guard or some other government entity could use them, it would certainly be better than leaving them sitting there. But they may be torn down. So, and the Treasurer is working now to try to find out if we can pay those bonds off, if we wouldn't be better off than having this $4.8 million being sucked out of the PERS fund.
And then doing how much interest is that on a deal?
That's the payment, including
interest.
Since 93. So perhaps the bonds have seasoned enough that we could pay those off without a huge penalty, and the Treasurer is looking into that. Didn't mean to get off the point, but the fact of when you're looking for space, and those spaces out there are huge. I've forgotten the dimensions, but they're just huge.
Well, we feel guilty now suggesting you the $200,000 is a lot of money when we're spending $4.8 million on interest and payments on an empty hangar.
For next one.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you. We have been discussing tourism and this kind of thing. I think we should focus on education. Education is the thing that we want for our youth. Our youth, our display is taken from the French War through to, I have a daughter who is also in the Korean War. It's going to take up to the last war. It's going to take care of all of the wars. And we have items already displaying that kind of thing. Our youth, some of them do not even realize there was any wars. They don't believe what they see in the papers. Some things, when you talk of the Holocaust, it's unbelievable even to those of us who lived through this. And we feel that the children need to be educated so they know what to look for or to look out for in case of the kinds of things that cause stress to our various nations, as is happening daily, as you see on the news, you see in your newspapers. And I think we should be stressing education as well as tourism. Of course, we're for tourism, but I think our youth needs to be educated. And we have visions of busloads of children coming in to see these items and seeing things that they never before have seen or probably heard of. And I think that is the major issue for any museum. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sir, can I ask a question?
Yes, certainly.
Any of the folks here? One of the things, and whoever would like to respond, or in multiple, is fine. On 635, it talks about funding. It does provide the military department with the authority to receive donations and contributions. If this is analogous to other projects that we're probably familiar with, you know, with the right leadership, and this certainly is a topic that elicits a lot of as you advocates are today, a lot of support, you know, properly channeled. Do you have any sense as to the ability to generate private funds through this vehicle, in addition to whatever may not happen on a state level? But I'm thinking of the war memorials and other things that, under proper leadership, can get a lot of support behind them. And I was just wondering if you have any thought about this serving as a vehicle to receiving private donations to help up the financial ante. Anybody have any idea on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, one of the charges that the Ways and Means Committee did give us during the budget process was that we do precisely that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we've done a good job in the past, because we have not. It's not been the highest priority that we've had to deal with, obviously, and it hasn't received the kind of attention that the department probably should have been giving it. What we have done since the budget process, since we went through Ways and Means, is that we have two draft proposals now that are being reviewed by the Adjutant General and being staffed within the military department to do precisely what you said. We have in current statutory language that there is room or authority to have a military museum auxiliary, and that auxiliary needs to have some highly motivated, highly generated folks, which we've identified two or three and asked them to look for others, to include the folks that traditionally fund these kind of things. And I'll just, there's a major aircraft manufacturer out in McMinnville who's been extremely kind to the Oregon National Guard, had a son who was formerly a pilot of ours. And so there are some contacts out there being done as we speak to see if we can generate that kind of interest, because you're precisely correct. Without that kind of motivation, without those kind of people that are out there right now that can generate those additional other funds, this will probably never be all that successful, looking for the public to continue to fund it. For whatever reason, and I don't mean to demean this effort, because it's important to us, our history, everything that we do is predicated on our history in the military. So it is important to us, and it's important for education. But for whatever reason, this small little sum of money becomes, every 2 years we come up and it becomes a focal point of what we should or shouldn't be doing in the National Guard. We have a $385 million budget, most of which can't be spent on the museum, obviously. And we end up spending more time dealing with this $150,000 or $200,000, and it's just literally incredible. And we shouldn't have to do that. One, we shouldn't do it, and two, we need to be smarter at how we do it. So some of the blame belongs right in our court, and we accept that, and we have made a commitment that we're going to go out and change this and make it better, because it just isn't getting the job done. We have too limited resources. We can't rely upon the legislature to continue to do that. So we have to have outside money that's going to make this thing what it should be. One of the greatest things that's happened to us in the last 2 years, frankly, has been a book called The Greatest Generation by Tom Brokaw. And I think that's done more for us in our museum efforts than anything we've done in the last 10 years. And we're trying to play upon that a little bit and take advantage of that. Because there is an interest in this age group who saved the world, frankly. And I think that it's incumbent on us to try to not only take advantage of people's interest, but also get them to contribute with money to help further that education that was spoke of and the artifacts themselves. So I think, by and large, we probably have more motivation this time around than we've ever had, and a lot of it has to do with outside influences that we didn't anticipate, and we're grateful for that.
I appreciate, Mr. Caldwell, your comments, because, and I know how difficult it is to take an idea and have the leadership to move it, and because, you know, in terms of the financial aspect, that's very tough, and you folks have a great, of course, this is my district, in case anybody doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Camp
Winthrop.
Your support, all of you, is so wonderful. And I worked very close with the veterans to have Veterans Memorial Highway named this last year for 205 Veterans Memorial Highway. But I was just thinking what you mentioned, and to think when we were starting the World War II Memorial in D.C., and, you know, what a Bob Dole and a Tom Hanks did for generating public support, and then, you know, the attendant state support to help that. And I'm thinking under that type of leadership, I think there's a lot of folks in the state of Oregon with that type of leadership, you know, who would help make that a reality, because it is so important. And however we can get there, I think is worthy, because these stories, these things need to be told.
Senator Clarno.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just can't help but think about the children that collect dimes to do the Gold Pioneer,
mm-hmm.
and I'll bet every veteran has a grandchild or a great-grandchild, and maybe we need to work with the schools and see what we could do to raise some money to match what the Guard has done, and see if there's some that could go along with the lady that mentioned the education process, and they could understand why they are collecting the money for the people who made this country what it is. Thank you.
Ed, before you speak, though, I want to deal with something. And it's been an absolute pleasure for me to drive by every day and look at a massive hangar going up out there in honor of Mike Smith, as you pointed out, a great young pilot, a friend of mine, a fellow filbert grower, back when we used to call him filbert. And of course, his dad, Del Smith, you know, continuing that effort. And that, to me, just shows you that with an interest in people, you can make this thing work. And that's one reason we wanted to bring these forward, is to have this thing finally dealt with. I mean, if we're not going to deal with this thing of providing a suitable a depository for all of these artifacts, then we need to be honest about it, because we don't need to be back here 2 years from now talking about this. So, my feeling is right now we need to look at those options. I mean, I'm really curious about going to look at that hangar. Ed, tell us about where you think we're headed on all this.
Well, for the record, Mr. Chairman, Ed Hughes for Oregon's Veterans, and we concur wholeheartedly with what the National Guard and what my veterans here are saying. It has been a problem, and we're trying to resolve it. So at the request of the chair, thank you, Senator George, we are exploring an answer to Senator Metker's question about raising some funds. So we've come up with an idea that there would be a good possibility that we could make a success in Oregon of a military museum tour. So we've drafted legislation. We've had it done over in the House because Representative Backlund wanted to do it and was pushing for it. So we went over there and talked to him. And first we were talking about a bus tour that people could take. It would be a one-day bus tour to visit Oregon's military museums. But to tell you the truth, it's sort of grown out of demand. People wouldn't want necessarily to take a bus. Sometimes they'd like to drive. And we thought perhaps the program would be a visit to, first, the Oregon Military Museum in Clackamas County, and then the Oregon Maritime Museum and Center in Astoria, and then the Captain Michael King Evergreen Aviation Museum, which is the Spruce Goose in McMinnville, and these may not be in the exact order, and then the Tillamook Air Museum, which, as you know, is the single blimp hangar that's left in Tillamook, and then a visit to Camp Rylea, which Colonel Caldwell mentioned is extremely important and really started our military efforts here, except for the history part of it. So we thought we'd throw in the history and have a visit to Fort Clatsop, which was Captain Meriwether Lewis and Captain Clark, and then also to Fort Stevens, which was the old coast artillery fortification there out on the point at Astoria, or across from Astoria. And we thought that would make a really nice two-day tour. So we're talking about it and decided maybe what we could do is get the Tourism Department in Oregon to establish a military museum tour so that any persons who are visiting Oregon or are live here in Oregon could go on this tour for a fee. And as you know, a lot of Californians visit here and a lot of people from Washington and Canada come down, and they don't want to go see, from what everybody tells me, the ocean and the mountains, because they have that there. What they want to see is something that is unique to Oregon, and this certainly is unique and very historical, especially with the Lewis and Clark part of it and the Lewis and Clark celebration coming up. So here is a good idea, we think, and we're putting this out in House Bill 3845. We're busy making amendments to it now, and we would request the support of the Senate and this committee on this project. And here is an answer for Senator Metcalf. Here's some money, that some funds that we can raise. Now, other people are stepping forward. The owner of the Spruce Goose project out there has stepped forward and told us that if we need buses and gasoline, he might be able to afford some of that. So we've made this sort of a quasi-private effort as well. And so that all fits in with this, and I'm sorry to take you off on a house bill, but you needed to know about this and what's going on, and it does answer the question about helping to raise some funds.
Okay, great.
Chairman.
Yes, Senator Carter.
You know, I hate, Mr. Chairman, I just hate to be the spoiler here, but I just want to be a little objective. We cannot help but recognize the fact that $200,000 is not going to do the job. And in listening to the Colonel's words of wisdom, unless the legislature is going to put itself on the line for helping to lobby for the future of this project, it's not going to happen. And I just don't want to see us fooling people and making them think that this is going to go on interminably. It's not. I mean, it just doesn't sound like the dollars are there. And you've got to have a full-time fundraiser. Take it from me, a person who manages a $3.8 million budget, how you are a perennial fundraiser. And I just want to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can turn to the Colonel. Colonel, have you guys set aside the priority for maintaining the cost of this each year or each biennially to do this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I guess to fairly answer your question, we're faced with every 2 years, as every agency is, determining where we can fit our programs within the scope that the administration gives us.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular process, we did submit to the administration our desire to maintain the museum at its current recognizable inadequate level. The administration chose to not fund that, and it went to the Ways and Means Committee, and we supported that. We support our Commander-in-Chief, and the committee chose to redirect us to move money from another part of our budget to fund this.
Okay, so, let me ask another question, not of you, Colonel, to the other veterans. Are you prepared to come back to this legislature and righteously and indignantly ask them to fund what they chose to put back in a budget that the governor had not had in the budget, because that's what it's going to take? And then when the military department say, we don't have money funded for this, that you don't get upset with the military department, but put it on the backs of the people, the legislature, because if we have decided to give you the $150,000 or $200,000 to run it, not at a level of high dignity, I should say, because that's what I'm not hearing, that we can run it with all the dignity and respect of a world-class museum. I don't hear that at all. I'm just wanting to know, are you going to be prepared as an organization to come back here every year to get the legislature to fund this museum? Which I think is a good idea, by the way. Let me just say that. But it's going to take work. And this committee might pass this bill today, and you'll get the money. But 2 years from now, you're going to need to be right back here.
Financing such a thing is always a problem. However, we have had donations from the very beginning from all over the world. And we feel it's been very good. We've had to scratch sometimes to get the financing. But so far, we have made a go of it for what we needed.
Okay.
For a place or a housing, we have to kind of wait and see what is available. And then we have to face that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, the Ways and Means Subcommittee did give us the $148,000 to fund the museum for the next biennium. However, there was another message with that, and that was there will be no more money. And from now on, we are to fund this project privately. That was part of the message.
Okay.
So we're busy. That's one of the reasons for House Bill 3845. We're looking.
I just don't want to set anybody up to thinking that that this was an ongoing thing, because over the years what I have seen is that people say, I just need you to give me startup money, and they've come back, and then when people finally say, you know, this is supposed to be private enterprise, and it's not, the people are upset and disappointed, and I understand that piece. So I'm going to be a yes, but my daughter is in the National Guard right now, and my whole family, I have four military brothers, and so I have great respect for the work, and my brother fought in 1941 in Iwo Jima, so this is not against Margaret Carter not supporting. But the bottom line is being realistic, and that's what I wanted to make sure, that we don't set people up for something that is not going to be here in the future in terms of the financial strain. Thank you.
And Senator, that's kind of my point, is the fact that we need to be honest. A lot of times, if we sit back waiting for government to do it, you might have been a lot better off to do like Del Smith did and say, I think I'll build this pretty much on my own. Mm-hmm. How many of you out in that audience know where Eagle Field is in California? All right. We got one guy who knows where Eagle Field is. This is on the boondocks from Fresno and Merced. And I landed an airplane there about 6 or 7 years ago. And it used to be a crop duster strip, but back in World War II, it was a very active training base. And I couldn't believe it when I landed there. I thought I had entered into the Twilight Zone, because this thing has been completely restored with World War II vehicles. And I don't know, Colonel, do you have any idea how they did that? I doubt that the state of California put any money in it. Somebody must have had a massive volunteer operation. And I think that maybe is what we have to do. We just roll up our sleeves and say, okay, you know, these dollars are going to go away. We've got to make this thing work.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that you're absolutely correct in that statement. And again, as I said earlier, we have probably been neglect in pushing to go get that private interest group and groups into help us on this. The good news, in my opinion, is that one of the things that we have recognized presently is that we need to take a more active effort in seeking out the Del Smiths of the world to help us fund this particular item. It's important to us. It's extremely important to us. It's important not only to our history, but also for education. It was mentioned earlier, and it's an anecdotal short story, was that we got on a loan when we all heard about the 2000 rollover with computers. I forgot what they called it, but had a name for the date rollover.
You mean Y2K?
Y2K, right, whatever.
Y2K,
everything was supposed to go south. What we did is, recognizing that most of the students don't understand, I mean, they're all computerized now, and they're a whole lot more competent than I'll ever be. We got an Enigma machine that was on display at the Smithsonian, and there's very few of them around. And we brought it in, and we took it around to different schools in the Portland area, because the Enigma machine was actually the first real good computer that the Germans used in World War II. And we also took with it the history of the fellow who broke the code on that, who was a British mathematician who invented the test for computers that are still used today as to whether computers can think on their own. And we took that whole history piece and took it around to different schools to say, this is the machine. This actually happens, you know, 55 years ago. But this was the first one, and this really started the computer craze. Not computer craze, but computerization in the modern world. So we do that. And we also take artifacts out and put them in our armories as we have available space and put them on display that represent that unit, that particular community, its history. And these artifacts represent those men and women who served in uniform. So we've been doing a lot better job. What we haven't done well, and we admit that, is we haven't been able to tap the resources Senator Metzger talked about, which is a very, very challenging effort. Senator Carter spent the last 4 or 5 years doing that on a full-time basis. She's probably the best qualified in this room to talk about those kind of efforts and how difficult it truly, truly is. We recognize that as our challenge. We recognize that as something that we intend to do this next 2 years and to put together the right men and women to do that. And that's where I think the veterans showed an interest, and that's where we'll go to ask for help.
Senator Messerly.
Could I add to that? We have the schools involved already. They are building some of the cabinets and that kind of thing. So they also are taking a uniform. They choose this uniform and the party that was in the uniform, and they are putting together a complete history of that individual in the military at that time. The schools are already involved in this to some degree.
Senator Messerman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm enjoying thinking about some of the history in my own area, Coos Bay area. And I doubt if very many people in this room, maybe or for sure even in my locality, know that Coos Bay North Bend Airport was once a naval base training aircraft to land on aircraft carriers. And the hospitals and the bunks and the dormitories and everything that were there, and what a going concern that was right at the end of World War II. Also, when the war ended, towards the end of the war, the amount of ammunition that was buried out on the north spit of Coos Bay, and the ships, the merchant ships that were chased into the harbor by the Japanese submarines, and there's an awful lot of history. My point is throughout the state. And Mr. Hughes, your comments on the museum tour, we are missing an opportunity in many of our communities throughout the state that we don't document those stories and what really went on. I know I was just a little kid when it happened, but the lights out, the blackouts, and those kind of things that we had to live with. And I think it's we need to document all this information. I doubt if it's even talked about in the schools in my own community, where these very things went on back in the early 40s.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Messley, how many people know that Coos Bay is one of the top deep water ports in the world and is not used? How many people know that?
Well, I'm trying to tell that story.
Senator Caldwell, could I ask you and Ed Hughes to stay right there in case we need to interact again? And we'll excuse our three here. And Patrick, we have more who'd like to testify.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It appears that some of the guests have departed, so as I read the names, I may, if they're not here, just keep on going down the list. But the first name is Lyle Voth.
Yes, and Lyle just left.
Lyle. Yeah. Did Lynn Hayes also leave, Mr. Chair? Lynn Hayes?
Yes, Lynn left. Too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Ruth Turvey?
She left.
Okay. Susan O'Brien? Okay. Come on up, Susan, please. Okay. All right. Oh, McDonald, okay. And did Norma Weiler also want to come up with that? Okay, I guess we'll wait on that then.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald. I'm with the Salem Area Veterans Organization. Also represent the VFW, state VFW, and the Military Order of World Wars. I'd like to start first by testifying on Bill 636. I'd like to recommend some changes. In Section 2, Line 12, rather than 6 members on the board, I recommend 7, so we don't have a 3-3 tie on any voting. So the last word in line 12, I recommend change from 6 to 7. On line 17, it talks about one member of the Oregon State Bar. I'd like to change that to the Oregon State Defense Force. On line 19, change the 1 to 2, make members plural, and add to it who are members of veterans organizations. And we do support the bill as amended. Any questions on the changes recommended?
You know where Eagle Field is.
We'll have to this. On Senate Bill 635, we do not. We are opposed to this bill. And we're opposed to it for several reasons. We feel that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs should run a veterans museum. Not the National Guard can have their own museum, which it is, and the articles that go into this museum become part of the Department of the Army Museum Association. If that museum ever closes down, those articles leave Oregon. They do not belong to Oregonians. They belong to the Department of Army Museum Association.
Mr. McDonald,
yes.
Wouldn't that preclude those items being transferred, like to a private museum or a cooperative museum? I'm thinking of McMinnville and to...
According to what the curator told me up at Clackamas, is that an article comes into that museum, it's put on the Army Museum list,
right,
and then becomes part of the Department of the Army Museum Association items. So if anything happens, we lose them. I feel that we need to have a veterans museum under the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I propose, not this session, but next session, looking at a co-function of the state and private enterprise establishing an Oregon Veterans Museum, because if we don't do it now, it's going to be lost. At the present time, the Greater Salem Area Veterans Organization has some 45 different uniforms from all services, complete ribbons, medals, etc. It has over 125 pictures and over 500 items that will be displayed in the state capitol from 27 May till 16 June of next year. When they're not here, we're proposing that it goes out to various cities, schools, or businesses to be displayed. The city of Bend has already asked us for the display to put there. But we feel that to really identify the museum at Clackamas, it should be the National Guard Museum, because that's exactly what it is. It may have a few items from other services, but it basically is National Guard items, National Guard vehicles from the National Guard, and not representing equally all services.
Mr. McDonald, I appreciate that. I just looked at the bills to see what the relating clause was, and of course they both say Oregon National Guard, and wondering about if there wasn't a possibility of bringing your recommendations in relative to the Veterans Museum.
What we're going to propose in the next session is we have an Oregon Veterans Educational Military Museum, and we emphasize the word educational. And the and things we put down below are for the education of young people, not necessarily for the education of people that are our age or slightly younger, but for the young people who have no idea of what the veterans have done from the Revolutionary War up to the present time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Patrick Jackson, right? Well, actually, we had Mr. Chair, Doug Tindall from the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Okay, Doug was here to talk about the signs on the road. We'll ask everyone to pay close attention to House Bill 3845, Ed. 3845. Now, Doug, if we put this thing down in that beautiful $50 million hangar at Portland International Airport, you wouldn't have a sign problem, would you?
Probably not. Chair George, members of the committee, I'm Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer for the Department of Transportation. I'm here to bring to your attention one point about Senate Bill 635 as it pertains to the requirement for signing. The exit that you take to get to the proposed museum is off of I-205 and it's exit 12. In that area, I-205, there are a whole bunch of destinations and a whole bunch of signs. And we were actually approached with the request to put up the signing, or asked to what it would take to put up the signing, and we found that there are federal and state rules that indicate that you should have no more than four destinations at any one interchange, otherwise it becomes confusing to drivers. There are already four destinations, both northbound and southbound, at exit 12. These are places like Estacada, Clackamas, Mount Hood, those kinds of locations. So in order to comply with the signing provision in Senate Bill 635, we would have to replace those signs and remove one of the existing destinations. We don't have any concern with the there's no problem in terms of a legality of signing for such a museum. It's allowable under cultural and historic signing laws, so there's no issue there. We certainly, ODOT certainly supports the military contributions both to the United States and to Oregon. It's just that if we proceed with this bill as it is written exactly, we would have to take down or remove a destination from exit 12 and replace it with signing to the museum.
Okay.
I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Andrew, would you like to speak to that? Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Tindall and I have worked on many projects in the past before. We always work out things pretty good. They've dedicated I-205 as the Veterans Highway, and there is now a sign as you come off of I-5.
Right.
What is it, a half mile, and it says Veterans Memorial Highway. What if we were to put on that sign underneath exit,
so
whatever
so
the exit number is for Clackamas, right, and then a sign inside the barrier away from federal control, saying Camp Whittingham Military Museum, turn left in.
Do we have a southbound sign coming off over the bridge indicating that okay, designated highway?
It's on the Washington side.
On the Washington side, right. Okay, so Doug, what do you think about that idea?
Well, it's you don't normally sign. I think that's 12 miles away from the exit, and putting directional or destination signing that far away from a destination or point is usually not very effective because people tend to forget by the time they get there, and you're faced with a whole bunch of other exits going off. I appreciate Ed's idea, but it's not typically something that, not typically how we would sign it according to the manual on uniform traffic control devices.
Oh, I hate those feds and their regulations. Anyway, back to this thing. Thank you, Senator. How big is that sign that's designating this Veterans Highway?
Is it six by four or is it nine by six?
9 by 6, I think. I thought it was 11 by 6, actually.
Is the full sign used up? I mean, would it be possible to add something like this to it? I mean, whether it was effective or not, you would at least be better off than we are right now with nothing.
Senator, can I just say something?
Certainly.
I think we're going into different territory there. That's a sign for the Veterans Highway in honor of veterans, and we start making a destination. I think we might have some difficulty with our veterans because I hope I'm not speaking out of term, but that was done for the veterans, and it should stand alone. And I think we would find our veterans would feel that way.
And just
from my experience on it, not that it's not a good thought, but.
Right.
And Chair George, I would add that along the same lines, when we design a sign like that, we design it for the legend that's going on it. Sometimes if you think you're in a growing area and you have a destination sign, you might make it bigger so you can add on to it, but this is not a case where we anticipated adding anything on to the signing as a Veterans Memorial Highway.
Okay, great. Is there anyone else like that to talk
about? Can I just have one more question about signing? On the other way, you're talking about you have these four sides at Highway 212, right? is there any reason why a half mile before that you couldn't just have a single sign if there was a museum that says, you know, Oregon Military Museum or whatever it would turn out to be, you know, next exit? I mean, a separate, apart from the other four that say Mount Hood, you know, Clackamas.
Chair George, Senator Metzger, has two issues with that. One is, in that particular area, there's no lateral room to put in another sign. If you drive through there, you'll find out there's just a ton of signs in there.
Drive every day. So.
Yeah, okay. And you probably don't notice most of them that are there. That's one of our problems with oversigning. The second issue is for destination signing, the federal and state rules tell us that you need, if you're on a facility with more than three lanes in an urban area, you need overhead signing. So we can't put one. You end up, what happens when you do that is you end up with somebody who's in the left-hand lane, can't see it until the last second, and then tends to make a move across traffic that's potentially dangerous.
Good. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 635 and 636, and we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 697. Patrick, tell us where we are with that.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 697 in its original draft required the Oregon Department of Transportation, as part of its biannual review of flat fee rates, to distribute questionnaires to trucking companies in order to determine the percentage of total miles traveled that occur on Oregon highways, the percentage of total miles traveled carrying a full load, and the number of axles used for all vehicles operating a combined weight that exceeds 80,000 pounds. It also required the Legislative Assembly to make adjustments to flat fee rates in order to ensure that flat fee paying carriers would pay as much as they would if they had reported taxes under the weight mile tax system. There is a Dash 1 amendment, and it requires ODOT to only select a sample of motor carriers rather than distributing questionnaires to all motor carriers that pay flat fees, and to distribute the questionnaires to and conduct interviews with these selected carriers. It also allows ODOT, as part of its survey process, to request any other information the department considers necessary to carry out the purposes of this bill. It requires the Legislative Assembly to review the findings of the study and for ODOT to report the findings of the study to the legislature, but it does not require the legislature to enact adjustments that are recommended by the study. There is a no revenue impact issued for this bill, and there was a minimal fiscal impact issued. My understanding was that it was originally $20,000, but now that there will only be a sample, it would be significantly less. And I can tell you that the motor carrier industry did come up to the chair right before this hearing and made it clear to him that they were in support of this bill. And we do have Mr. Mike Marsh from the Oregon Department of Transportation, who helped us with this bill, sitting out in the audience.
Well, let's ask him to come up then. Mr. Marsh.
Mr. Chair, Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation. The only comment I'd make is that the bill as amended, we think, makes sense. It gives us direction about doing a sampling process, so we're not concerned about moving the bill forward. The only comment we'd make is that regarding flat fees, we do need at some point to have flat fees adjusted to a rate that pays for the costs, or to have flat fees eliminated, and that does not relate to this bill. So on this bill and to the point, we think the adjustments make sense.
Mr. Marsh, do you have any idea what the new fiscal may be as a result of Mr. Valdez's?
We think it'll be very minimal, in the neighborhood of $4,000 if we did a 25% sample, maybe more like $8,000 or so if we did a 50% sample.
Okay. Anybody else want to testify on this bill?
As
amended? Senator Carter.
I don't want to testify. I just want to welcome Mike. And,
thank you.
Congratulate him on his new position, and look forward to working with him.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd just say I'd echo what Senator Carter said. Welcome, and see you every day in this building, and we'll go home as soon as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Any other witnesses scheduled to testify or would like to testify? Yes, cities? Anybody want to?
No, sir.
Okay. Then I will.
Wait.
What?
I don't want you to close yet. I want to talk some. I want to ask some questions. We have the chairs coming here about committee stuff.
I'm just closing the public hearing. I'm not closing everything else. Is that okay?
That's okay.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 697, and do I have a motion to adopt the amendments to Senate Bill 697?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
It's been moved by Senator Carter that we adopt the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 697. Is there any objections? If not, so ordered. Senator Carter.
Move Senate Bill 697 to the floor for a due pass recommendation.
It's been moved that we send Senate Bill 697 to the floor for a due pass. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Okay, now, the chair is not here, but do you have any questions that we can answer?
Mr. Chairman, I know I won't be able to make Newport, and other members are saying it also, so...
We know what date, I haven't heard what date that is yet.
Yeah, I had, Mr. Chairman, I had forwarded that message along to the committee staff,
last
week, and it was, it was April 3rd from 3 to 5 in Newport.
What day of the week is that, Patrick?
That is a, I believe it's a Tuesday.
Okay, Senator Carter.
The other one is that I think the senator was talking about meeting on Wednesday. That's impossible for me because I have other committee assignments. And also, since it's the citizens' legislature, I need to go home to work and back to my office. And so I thought the senator would be here because that would create a hardship for me. And I'd like to be present at committee meetings, but I can't on a Wednesday.
Is there another day that would be more amenable to your schedule?
No, Mr. Chairman, it would not. Okay. Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, so you know, I had looked at all of your schedules and identified Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 3 to 5 as basically the only times that we could meet. Fridays from 3 to 5 didn't work very well at all because the members were trying to break for the weekend, so that left Monday and Wednesday from 3 to 5.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I just want to be real clear so you guys will know this. I don't work for anybody from 3 to 5 on Fridays.
Okay. Well, obviously, I won't decide that, Senator Carter, but we'll definitely pass that on to the chair of the committee about the Wednesdays. Oh, yes. Thank you. It has been brought to my attention that we failed to identify a carrier on Senate Bill 697 on the flat fees. Would anybody enjoy carrying that on the floor?
I've done the first one.
Okay, I think in that case, then we will sign the carrier of that to Senator Gary George. And we'll pass those comments on. I'm just curious. Has anybody else checked their schedule on April 3rd as to whether you're able to go?
Sure, I have, and that's very difficult for me to take off the whole afternoon and into the evening. And I too am just really bound up with time.
Right.
That's the only time on Mondays and Wednesdays that I can really fill in and get my callbacks and my organization for the Natural Resource Committee down. Right. And so I really do not want to bind that up.
Well, I guess I have a problem because I have a committee from 1 to 3 every day but Friday.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what April 3rd's on. But I couldn't leave. I couldn't get to Newport if I left here at 3 in time to do anything. Yeah. So I'm thinking geographically it's not going to work for me.
And I do have Senate Judiciary also. But so I guess we're going to have to work on that, Patrick, and we'll just have to see what we can do on that. Is there any other business to come before the committee?
Yes. I just hate to just say to the chair, I mean, I don't even mind staying over an hour later on a Tuesday, Thursday. I don't mind that. But I cannot take on any further because I'm missing 2 days a week from work as it is, and I don't mind taking on an extended hour on a Tuesday, Thursday to accomplish those goals for me personally.
Right.
I don't know where others are, but it would create a hardship for me any other time.
Well, we will obviously discuss that further and see what the chair's desires with your input would like to do.
And I guess I would just say, Mr. Chair, my dilemma is that on the budget committee, I sit on it from 1 to 3, and sometimes they go beyond 3 and I leave so I can be here. There's two senators, myself and Senator Yee, and if we're not there in a work session, they have an awful time. It's just tough, and I think I recognize what Senator George is trying to get as much information to us as we can and have as many things to do, but it's just that committee process, and if you're on judiciary, you know what I mean. You just kind of have to be there, so it is unfortunate.
Okay, we'll work on that. And we'll discuss that and get back. No further business. Committee's adjourned.